After completing the journey back in brittle silence, Dr. Lamborn pulled up outside the main building. Amy waited impassively for him to come round to her side and open the door. She took hold of his outstretched hand and climbed out.
"I'd like to spend some time in the chapel, if I may, Dr. Lamborn."
He nodded. "Of course, I'll inform Sister." The chapel nestled between the main building and the administration villa, its ancient walls green with years of uncleared moss. The iron bell could be seen swinging from the top of the open tower, in spite of the early evening mists that threatened to cloak the churchyard. Amy turned the handle of the thick wooden door and crept inside. Her breath swirled in front of her as she stamped her feet on the bristled mat, the sound resonating around the Spartan interior. Two huge candles burned either side of the altar, the brass candlesticks gleaming in the flickering light. She sat down on a pew and pulled the hassock towards her, her knees cracking as she lowered herself into the praying position. She clasped her hands together, closed her eyes and tried to think of something to say to this omnipresent God who seemed to let her down on a regular basis, bestowing on her misery upon misery. She certainly had nothing to thank him for. After a cursory muttering of what she could remember of the Lord's Prayer, she heaved herself back onto the pew and gave an involuntary shudder. She had a queer feeling that she was not alone. It was nothing specific. She couldn't see or hear anything, but there was definitely another presence lingering just outside her consciousness.
"Hello?"
she called out.
Is there anybody there?"
She heard it then for certain. A scraping of feet along the gritty stone slabs to the side of the altar. She glanced towards the blue velvet curtain leading into the vestry, inhaling sharply as it was pulled to one side and a shadowy figure shuffled out of the blackness towards her. Chapter 28
"Jesus, Ed! You nearly gave me a heart..."
She stopped and checked herself, ashamed that she had nearly been so flippant about the condition that had just taken the life of her father.
"I mean, you scared me. A lot."
His dark curly hair had all but grown back, and his boyish face radiated a warmth she could revel in.
"I'm sorry. I didn't want to disturb you while you were praying."
She patted the pew next to her and he sat down.
"I wasn't really praying. I've got nothing to say to him. That's even if he exists."
Ed looked fearfully round the church and then up at the rafters as though expecting a bolt of lightning to pierce the roof.
"Shh, don't say that in here."
She laughed.
"The worst has already happened. There's nothing he can do to me now that could hurt me any more."
"What do you mean?"
"My father's passed away. A heart attack, they said. Which is no wonder, when he was trying to keep up with the demands of a young wife. He was 41 and saddled with a baby. At his age, I mean..."
She let the sentence trail off and shook her head.
"Oh, Amy, I'm right sorry to hear that. Can't be easy for you."
"I've lost everything, Ed. There's nothing left for me on the outside anymore."
"Don't say that,"
he urged, taking her freezing hand and holding it in his own warm one.
"You'll get better and leave this place. You'll meet someone and have a family of your own one day."
"You're so sweet, Ed. I wish I could believe that." She glanced at the blackened rag in his other hand and changed the subject.
"What are you doing here anyway?"
He nodded towards the altar.
"Polishing them brasses."
She fell silent for a moment, relishing the calmness of the church and Ed's uncomplicated company. She leaned her head against his shoulder, his rhythmic breathing instantly soothing her, placatory words no longer necessary. In his quiet, healing embrace, she felt a peace she had not known since her mother had died, and years of pent-up emotions, layer upon layer of them, slowly fell away. She closed her eyes and drifted off into an exhausted, dreamless sleep. It was some time later when she awoke with a jolt. It took her a moment to get her bearings.
She had no idea how long she had been asleep. She was still leaning against Ed's body, his arm around her shoulders, but something was not quite right. Ed? There was no answer. She turned to look at him in the face, but his eyes were unfocused and his pupils dilated. Ed, what's the matter? Talk to me! His lack of response stirred up the first feelings of panic. She grasped his shoulders and shook him gently, then felt his neck for any sign of a pulse, exhaling with relief when she felt the gentle pumping sensation against her fingers. His face was a death mask, though, his eyes unblinking and his mouth and jaw set as rigid as a statue's. Ed, please! His whole body began to jerk then, his arms and legs seemingly taking on a life of their own. He rolled off the pew onto the stone floor as he continued to thrash like a man drowning in a whirlpool. Ed, what's happening? She screamed. There was no room between the pews to crouch down next to him to offer comfort or any kind of practical assistance. After what seemed an eternity, the violent twitching ceased, and his whole body went rigid before eventually relaxing. A trickle of blood ran out of the corner of his mouth, and his face was chalky white and covered with a sheen of sweat. She stared down at his limp body, his breathing quick and shallow. "It's all right, Ed. I'm here," she soothed, bending down to smooth his dark hair across his forehead. He opened his mouth to speak, but no words came. He pointed to his lips and stuck out his tongue, panting like a dog. "Are you thirsty?" He nodded and attempted a smile, apparently grateful that she had understood. She squeezed herself out of the pew, returning a few moments later with a goblet of water she had procured from the sink in the toilet at the back of the vestry. She helped him into a sitting position and placed the goblet to his lips. He took a few tentative sips before his head lolled forward. She sat down, cross-legged in the aisle, and gently lowered him down so that his head was in her lap. She smoothed his hair and stroked his face until his pallid colour was replaced with a more healthy glow. "I'm sorry you had to see that. I'm sorry you had to go through it. You poor, poor thing. I can taste blood. I think I've bitten the inside of my cheek or something." She pulled a handkerchief out from her sleeve, dabbed it onto her tongue, and wiped the blood from his chin. He closed his eyes and began to breathe more deeply. "My head's throbbing, and I'm so tired, Amy. I'm always so tired after." "Shh, don't try to talk." She could still remember how she'd felt after she'd endured a fit during the wretched ECT. Her brain had felt too large for her skull, as though it had expanded somehow and was about to burst through the bones. The blinding pain had made her sick, and the tiredness had sapped her of her energy for the following week. "It's all right, Ed. I'm here now. Just you rest a while. I'm not going anywhere." She worked her fingers into his hair and gently massaged his scalp until she noticed his jaws slacken with sleep. After a time, her buttocks were numb with cold from the stone floor. Her back ached, and her legs were frozen in the cross-legged position. Her empty stomach gurgled and groaned like the ancient plumbing in the ward. She struggled to remember the last time she had eaten. Since the porridge at breakfast, the only thing to pass her lips was the sherry she had knocked back at the wake. She had no idea of the time, but could tell it was dark outside now, the only source of light coming from the two candles either side of the altar. It must be past tea time, but she was resigned to missing her evening meal. Ed was peaceful, and no matter how hungry she was or how much discomfort she was in, she would not wake him. Chapter 29. Ed was more unsteady on his feet than usual, but his slight frame made it easy for her to support him as she guided him along the corridor back to the ward. An old man, trousers at half-mast, a solitary tooth protruding from his bottom gum, marched towards them. Both his fists were balled and he punched himself in the face, alternating fists in a rhythm to match his stride. Amy covered her mouth, almost retching at the foul stench of urine that emanated from his body. Ed managed to smile. "A drawback to the new unlocked door policy." "You could say that." She looked at Ed, intelligent, coherent, a loving mother to care for him at home. It was all so wrong. Should you really be in here, Ed? It's not right that you have to mix with nutters like that. Oh, Jimmy the Panda's all right. He's quite a character when you get to know him. Jimmy the Panda? Yeah, he's always got two black eyes. What? Are you being serious? He smiled. There's all kinds in here, Amy. Most with very sad stories to tell. People who call this place home, and are grateful for it too. I've met some wonderful people, and I'll always be thankful for what they've done for me. He paused. Don't be so quick to judge.
Coming from anybody else, it might have sounded like a telling off, but his smile took the sting out of his words, and she merely nodded. Perhaps she could learn a thing or two from Ed. They stopped at the entrance to his ward.
I'm fine from here, Amy, but thanks for looking after me. And again, I'm right sorry about your dear father.
Thank you, she whispered. And you take care of yourself, do you hear me?
I will.
He held his arms wide, swaying slightly as she stepped into them. They held each other for a few moments, both wanting to preserve this basic human contact that most people took for granted. By the time she arrived back on her own ward, the curtains were drawn and the lights had been turned out. Sister Atkins was in her office, thumbing through a magazine.
About time! Where in God's name have you been?
Dr. Lamborn said he was going to tell you. I've been to the chapel for some quiet reflection.
You've been gone for hours. That's a hell of a lot of reflecting. And now you think you can just waltz back in here?
She stood up and slapped the magazine down on the desk.
I bloody knew this would happen if they unlocked the doors. Patients coming and going as they please. It'll end in disaster, mark my words.
She reached for her cigarettes.
And don't even think about trying to escape. We'll only fetch you back again and things will be a lot worse for you.
She sucked in a lung full of smoke and exhaled it dragon-like through her nose. It was my father's funeral today.
Sister stopped mid-drag. That's as maybe, but it doesn't give you the right to swan off willy-nilly. You've missed tea, so you'll have to go hungry, but perhaps that'll be a lesson to you. Now, get to bed before I do something you'll regret.
Pearl and Queenie were both asleep, Pearl on her back, mouth agape, an annoying rattle reverberating in the back of her throat. Amy peeled back the thin sheet and climbed in. She pulled the pillow over her head and clasped it to her ears. Thank God she would not have to endure this place for much longer. She heard the springs creak and felt someone plonk themselves down on the end of her bed. She removed the pillow and stared at the figure in the half-light.
Who's there?
Shh. It's me, Belinda.
Amy pulled herself into a sitting position and folded her arms. She was in no mood for bother tonight.
What do you want?
Belinda looked behind towards Sister's office.
Noticed you weren't at tea, so saved you something.
She pulled out a bowl from behind her back.
It's cold now, but still edible.
Amy took the bowl and prodded the contents with a spoon.
Stewed apples and custard, said Belinda. Apples could have done with a bit more sugar, but it's better than now.
The thick custard had formed an unappetizing yellow skin, but even so, Amy's mouth watered at the prospect, and she dug the spoon in.
Thank you, Belinda.
The other girl grinned and stood to leave.
You're welcome.
Amy scraped round the bowl with her finger, making sure she removed the last vestiges of the dessert. Belinda waved at her from the bed opposite, and Amy returned the gesture. Random acts of kindness were certainly scarce in this place, and sometimes came from the most unexpected source. Chapter 30 The clouds had shifted, allowing the sun to penetrate their stubborn veil. Dr. Lamborn looked up at the sky and gave a contented smile. He placed a cushion on each of the white-painted wrought-iron chairs and set a jug of hand-picked daffodils in the middle of the table. Their petals were a little crusty, but the splash of colour brightened up the tiny courtyard. He was proud of his cottage garden, which brought him immense pleasure and provided a welcome respite from the gloomy atmosphere he often had to endure at work.
A stepping stone path led to a small pond at the bottom, and the domed heather beds provided a riotous display of varying shades of pink and purple. He held his palms to the sky and, satisfied there was no moisture in the air, went inside to fetch the tray of shortbread. The harsh frosts of winter had thawed, and as the April sunshine warmed the soil, the grass was beginning to grow again, and leaves were unfurling on the trees. He spread his newspaper out on the table, the breeze just enough to lift the corners. He slapped his hand down on the paper and tried to concentrate on the words as he waited for his guest to arrive. At precisely 11 o'clock, two things happened at once. The cuckoo in the kitchen clock shot out of its hiding place, and the doorbell rang. Good, he noted. She was prompt. He couldn't bear tardiness. He opened the door. Good morning. Please, won't you come in? Go straight through to the back. I thought we might sit in the garden. She wiped her feet on the mat carefully and deliberately, taking more time than he thought was absolutely necessary. Thank you, she replied. She settled herself into one of the chairs whilst he brewed a pot of tea in the kitchen. You have a lovely garden, she called to him. He came out with a pot and took the other seat. Thank you. It's only small, but perfectly formed, I always think. Yes, quite. Her eyes fluttered about the garden, focusing on anything other than him, her unease evident in the way she shuffled on her seat. The transition from the last time he had seen her was seismic. Gone were the features hollowed out by grief. Her once insipid complexion now radiated health, and her hair shone, falling in gentle curls that rested on her shoulders. She cleared her throat to speak, and this time looked directly at him. This seems a little unorthodox. I wonder about your motives, Dr. Lambourne. He raised his eyebrows. I mean me coming here to your home when you've a perfectly adequate office in which to meet people. He wiped the shortbread crumbs from his mouth with a napkin. It's perfectly fine, Carrie. The atmosphere in the hospital can be somewhat stifling, and I thought a more ambient setting would be beneficial to us both. Does my stepdaughter know I'm here? My patients are not party to every move I make. I saw no need to apprise her of the situation. And what is the situation, Doctor? He offered her the plate of shortbread, but she wafted it away with her hand. You are now Amy's next of kin. The merest flicker of annoyance crossed her face. So? Just before your husband died, I wrote to him about Amy's progress and suggested the time had come for a review of her certification. She shook her head. I've never seen the letter. That may well be the case, but it doesn't alter the fact that I wrote it. She turned away. Is that honeysuckle around your door? He didn't need his psychoanalytical skills to spot this diversionary tactic. Yes, it is. It may be a mass of dead twigs now, but in a few months it will be resplendent with flowers and their scent will be quite heavenly. He picked up the teapot and swirled it to agitate the leaves inside. More tea? She shook her head. I can't cope with her at home, Dr. Lambourne. She tried to kill my baby. It's not right. You can't expect me to take her back. Where do you expect her to go, then? She shrugged. I don't know. It's all such a mess. I'm not ready to take her. She picked absently at a daffodil, tearing off its petals. Will you ever be ready? I can't say, Dr. Lambourne. I really can't say. Well, I appreciate your honesty, Carrie. He threaded his hands together. Look, I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll keep this meeting off the record. I'll continue my sessions with Amy, but you must understand, I can't keep her certified without just cause. She's made plenty of progress, and I don't want the superintendent questioning my methods. It makes me look bad, as though I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, said Carrie, dragging the word out. Now we're getting to the truth. This is all about you, not Amy.
He paused, choosing his words carefully.
If it helps you to believe that, then so be it, but I don't recommend a head-in-the-sand approach.
I need to put my baby first, Dr. Lamborn. Surely you can see that. She's all I have left now.
I understand. And he did. He really did. Let me see what I can do. I promise you that neither you nor your baby will be placed in any danger.
She visibly relaxed, her shoulders dropping as she let out a deep sigh.
Thank you, Dr. Lamborn. You've no idea what that means to me.
He smiled and extended his hand.
Now, why don't I show you round my garden? I've got some lovely azaleas coming into bloom, and there's a marvellous cloud of frog spawn in the pond.
Carrie wrinkled her nose.
Frog spawn?
She studied his face, checking he was serious.
Go on, then. Lead on.
He took hold of her delicate hand, the softness of it taking him by surprise. He was used to the calloused palms of the nurses or the chapped hands of the patients, which he tried to avoid shaking at all costs. He placed his other hand in the small of her back as he guided her towards the pond, catching a whiff of her perfume, the familiar scent at once transporting him back to happier times. He felt possessed by it, unprepared for this sudden invasion of memories that surged unbidden into his head. He shook them away. No good ever came from dwelling on the past.
Chapter 31. A gentle breeze tickled the tops of the tall poplars that lined one edge of the park. A welcome breeze that cooled the heat of the late afternoon sun, which had caused her face to glisten and damp patches to form under her arms.
Feels good to take the air, doesn't it?
Dr. Lamborn took a deep breath, his chest inflating with the effort. Amy had to agree. Anything felt better than scuttling around the grounds of the asylum under the hawkish gaze of the nurses. They walked along the riverbank side by side, the water still high and rushing after the winter rains. Their hands brushed against each other, and Amy willed the doctor to take her hand in his. Conscious of her damp palms, she wiped them down her dress just in case he did. The superintendent had introduced a new wardrobe to the ward, and although she appreciated the lightness of the summer dress, her feet felt hot in the sturdy shoes, too tight and cumbersome for such a sunny day.
Dr. Lamborn, would it be all right if I paddled in the river? My feet are very uncomfortable.
I see no reason why not.
He pointed a little way ahead. There's a bend up there and a small patch of beach. It's the perfect spot for a sit-down. Amy wondered how he knew this. Who else had he taken to this perfect spot? They sauntered on in quiet contemplation, the only sounds coming from the swishing of her skirt and the call of a nearby blackbird. They reached the sandy area beneath the shade of a weeping willow, and Dr. Lamborn spread out the tartan rug he'd been carrying under his arm. Amy removed the heavy shoes and thick stockings, hoisted up her skirt and gingerly tiptoed to the river's edge. The iciness of the water came as a shock. She had been expecting a soothing, tepid flow at this time of year, and she almost lost her balance. But it was more than just the freezing water. It was something she couldn't quite put her finger on, something just beyond the reach of her consciousness. She began to sway as she stared at the water rushing past her feet, holding her arms out in an effort to stay upright, and then she remembered. The horror of it all played back in her mind like a cine film she had seen many times before, but had somehow wiped from her memory. She saw herself wade into the water, deeper and deeper she went, desperately craving oblivion. She remembered the screaming too, hysterical, strangulated sobs, and then there was the baby in her arms. The baby she had tried to... She fell forward into the river then, face down onto the shingle, a sharp rock catching her nose. In shock, she gulped in a mouthful of water as she saw a swirl of blood being carried off by the current.
strong hands then hauling her up and backwards onto the sand, laying her down on the rug, soothing tones, a calming hand on her forehead. She lay there staring up at the blue sky, at the birds gliding around in aimless circles, her breath coming in shallow gasps. Dr. Lamborn crouched next to her, his face only inches from hers, his breath warm on her damp cheeks.
"You gave me quite a start there."
He dabbed his handkerchief onto the cut on her nose.
"I'm sorry, I'm not sure what happened." She floundered. "It was the feel of freezing water, I think. I was just transported right back to that day when I... Oh, God. I could hear her screaming. It was as though she was right behind me again, crying out for her baby. It was..."
He placed his finger on her lips.
"Shh, try not to distress yourself."
He hauled her into a sitting position and placed his arm round her shoulders, drawing her close, rocking her from side to side until she relaxed and her breathing returned to normal.
"Look," he said, "there's a fellow in a kiosk over there selling ice creams. I'm going to fetch us a couple of cones."
He climbed to his feet and brushed himself down.
"He looks as though he's about to close up for the day, mind, so I'll have to run."
When he returned with the ice cream cones, Amy was feeling much better. She picked bits of weed out of her sopping hair, her damp dress clinging uncomfortably to her skin. She stifled a giggle when she saw the state of his trousers where the river water had seeped up to the knee. He noticed her looking and smiled.
"Well, I hardly had time to remove my shoes and roll up my trouser legs, did I?"
He sat down in front of her and she took the proffered ice cream.
"I suppose not. Thank you for this."
She took a lick, savouring the long-forgotten creamy taste on her tongue. He removed his jacket and placed it around her shoulders.
"Here, you're shivering."
"Why are you doing this for me, Dr. Lamborn?"
"I don't want you to catch your death. Your dress is rather wet."
"I don't mean the jacket. I mean, why are you taking me out, giving me all this special attention?" He seemed to give the question a great deal of thought.
"You intrigue me, Amy,"
he replied eventually.
"I like your character, your indomitable spirit. And I don't think you're evil. You've suffered a great deal of loss in your life, and it's bound to have had an effect on you. But you've come a long way since that day I first saw you, and I want you to be ready when you face the outside world again."
"Oh, I see." She popped the end of the cone into her mouth as an awkward silence grew. She had given him the perfect opportunity to express his true feelings towards her. She'd set up the easel and propped up the blank canvas. All he'd had to do was write, "I love you," but he hadn't. "I think I want to go back now," she told him.
"Back home?"
"Back to Ambergate."
"Already? Aren't you having a nice time?"
"I thought you liked me, Dr. Lamborn."
"I do like you."
"But not in that way." He sighed.
"Amy, it's quite common for patients to form an attachment to their doctor. It goes with the territory, I'm afraid. But you must understand that any feelings I have for you are born out of my desire to help you, to cure you, if you will, to ease you back into society."
He paused whilst his words sank in.
"It's true that I have treated you differently. You wouldn't catch me walking in the park with the likes of Pearl or Belinda, for instance. But I have hopes for you, Amy. You're a special girl to me. I've devoted a lot of time to your case."
She scoffed. "Is that all I am to you, then? A case?"
"Amy, please stop twisting my words."
She fell silent for a moment. How could she have got everything so wrong? "I'm 20 years old, Dr. Lamborn. And you know, I've never been kissed." For a fleeting moment, he seemed rattled, unsure how to respond.
"Amy, all that lies ahead of you. You're a beautiful young woman,
Any man would be lucky to have you on his arm. Didn't you notice the way people looked at you when we were walking along the riverbank? You turned quite a few heads.
You're just saying that.
No, I'm not, he said emphatically. He leaned closer, tucking a stray curl behind her ear. She almost recoiled at the electrifying touch of his fingers. He let his hand trail along her jawbone, and when he seemed reluctant to withdraw it, she tilted her chin and moved closer to him. She closed her eyes, not wanting to witness his rejection. But she could sense he was still there, right in front of her, their warm breath mingling together. She could smell the soap on his skin, the faint whiff of tobacco. Blindly, she reached out and touched his cheek, the bristles he had shaved off that morning starting to shadow his skin once more. When she could bear the anticipation no longer, he shifted his weight, and then his lips were upon hers, his breathing becoming heavier and more urgent as his hands searched under her clothes. She stifled a squeal of delight. She'd been right all along. He had developed feelings for her, and now he was showing her the depth of his affection in a way that could not be misinterpreted. The foundations had been laid for her pathway out of Ambergate. She pulled away and clasped his face in her hands, so that he had no choice but to look at her.
I love you, Dr. Lambourne, she whispered.
Chapter 32. He was in such a hurry to unlock the door that he dropped the key 3 times before he successfully let himself in. He kicked the pile of post away and headed straight for the kitchen, turning on the cold tap and letting the water blast into the sink. He rolled up his shirt sleeves, made a bowl with his palms, and scooped the cold water over his face. After 3 dousings, the front of his shirt was soaked through and a puddle of water surrounded his feet. He leaned against the sink, breathing hard, his knuckles white and a pounding in his head that made him want to rip his hair out. They had walked back to the asylum in silence, neither of them sure what to say, but Amy had definitely been lighter on her feet, almost skipping in fact, a contented smile on her lips as she clutched his hand. He clenched his fists and banged them down on the countertop. How could he have been so stupid? He had taken advantage of a vulnerable young girl, and no matter that she had put up no resistance whatsoever, he should have known better. She'd even said she loved him. With every fibre of his being, he had wanted to say those words back to her, but how could he? He was her doctor. He should have come off her case as soon as he realised he was developing feelings for her. But he couldn't tear himself away. She enthralled him. He picked up the towel and dried his face, held it there, wishing he could turn back the clock. He reached for the bottle of whiskey he kept at the back of the cupboard for just such an emergency. Although he appreciated a fine wine, he really wasn't a big drinker, but tonight he would make an exception. He tipped a couple of painkillers into his palm and chugged them down with the whiskey. Then he took a second glass into the lounge, ducking to avoid the low slung beams that crossed the room. He wandered over to the mantelpiece, set the glass down, and picked up the silver-framed photograph. He ran his thumb over the picture, clearing the dust from her face. The face of the woman he thought he had truly loved once. The woman with whom he had planned a future. The woman upon whom all his hopes and dreams had rested. Until that awful day when she told him that although she loved him, she didn't love him enough. After her, he'd never imagined he would be capable of falling in love again. But Amy had changed all that. After tea, when the others had retired to the day room, Amy made her excuses and went to lie on her bed. She wanted to relive the afternoon in glorious slow-motion technicolour, to savour every caress, every kiss, the soft teasing ones, and the more urgent passion-filled ones. She trembled under his tender touch, every nerve end screaming in anticipation. He'd taken an agonising amount of time, but when the long-awaited moment came, the one that would transport her from a girl to a woman, she was carried off to a place she could never have imagined existed. She'd seen it in his face too, heard it in his laboured breathing, and felt it in the frenzied movement of his hips. Of course she wasn't just another patient. She'd known it all along. Now, even he could not deny it. The next morning she was awake long before the bell sounded. In fact, she'd barely slept at all, filled with excitement, making plans for a future that had seemed impossible until yesterday.
"Morning, Amy," greeted Ellen. "You're awake early. Is everything all right?"
Amy grinned.
"Oh, yes, nurse. More than all right, I'd say."
Ellen frowned.
"Well, it's nice to see you in a good mood. It's bath day. Do you want to take the first one?"
Normally, Amy would have jumped at the chance, but she wanted to savour the scent of him. For as long as she could still smell him, she knew that it hadn't been a blissful dream, one she would wake up from any second drenched in sweat with a physical ache at the thought of what might have been.
"No, thank you, nurse."
She gestured across to the other side of the ward. "Why don't you let Belinda take the first bath?"
"Well, I must say, that's very, very kind of you, Amy."
Ellen struggled to keep the surprise out of her voice.
"Very kind indeed. Belinda will be thrilled, I'm sure."
She gave Amy a puzzled look before crossing the room to rouse Belinda and give her the good news. It was later in the afternoon, as she stood in Sister Atkins' office, that the walls came tumbling down. "I'd like to see Dr. Lamborn, please," she asked politely but forcefully, knowing that a refusal would be hard to take. She'd been slightly disappointed that he hadn't come to see her, but she supposed he must be busy. He did, after all, still have other patients. Sister Atkins looked up from her desk.
"Well, you can't."
Amy immediately felt herself bristle.
"Why not?"
Sister Atkins was engrossed in a file on her desk once more.
"Because I said so,"
she replied.
"That's not a good enough reason, sister."
"It's good enough for me. Now clear off."
Amy stood her ground.
"I need to see Dr. Lamborn," she repeated.
"Yes, I heard you the first time. Now get out of my office before I drag you out."
Unwelcome tears threatened, but Amy refused to move.
"Please, Sister Atkins," she implored, trying to hold on to her temper.
Losing it would only make matters worse. Sister Atkins exhaled in exasperation.
"You can't see him because he's not here. He's gone away."
The floor shifted beneath her feet, and she grabbed the back of a chair to steady herself. The blood rushed so high up her face it made her scalp tingle. She could barely comprehend what she was hearing. It was as though she was wearing earmuffs. She could see Sister's mouth moving, but her words were distorted and unclear.
"What? No, he can't have done."
"This conversation has gone on long enough already. You asked me a question, I gave you the answer. Now bugger off and leave me in peace."
Sister returned to her file, jotting something down and underlining it savagely. Amy stood swaying slightly, trying not to reveal too much.
"Where's he gone, and when's he coming back?"
Sister Atkins looked up, her eyes narrowing.
"Are you still here?"
"Yes, but..."
Sister Atkins rose from her seat and shouted down the ward.
"Student Nurse Crosby, can you please come and remove a patient from my office?"
She turned back to Amy.
"Dr. Lamborn's been called away on a family emergency. Not that it's any of your business. He'll be gone indefinitely."
She placed her hands on her hips.
"Satisfied now?"
Amy turned and shuffled out of the office in a daze. A fog of utter disbelief. She shrugged off Nurse Crosby's attempts to help her and headed straight for her bed, climbing in and pulling the sheet over her head, trying to shut out the sound of the cackling women around her, their nonsensical murmurings and irritants she could do without. Nothing made sense anymore. What kind of emergency could have taken him away from her, just when they had so many plans to make for their future together? She curled up into the fetal position, a single tear sliding down the side of her nose. Everybody she loved always left her, one way or another. Chapter 33 The weeks dragged by.
endless days filled with monotony, petty squabbles, and despotic nursing staff. There had been absolutely no word from Dr. Lambourne. It was as though he had never even worked at Ambergate. At first, Amy had been hysterical, made a nuisance of herself at every opportunity, and pestered the nurses relentlessly for information. None had been forthcoming. Instead, she had been plied with drugs to calm her down, numb her senses, and turn her into a compliant patient who would cease to cause trouble. Except she didn't take the tablets. She perfected the art of pretending to swallow, theatrically throwing her head back and gulping down a slug of water, but she now had a pile of pills squirreled away under her mattress. One morning she was out in the grounds with Belinda, walking past the patch of land that had once been the airing courts, now reduced to rubble, ready to be turfed over and fringed with colourful flower beds. Belinda linked her arm through Amy's and pulled her closer.
"I'm glad you're my best friend."
Amy took a sideways glance at the girl. She wouldn't describe them as friends as such, rather two unfortunate souls who had been thrown together and decided to make the best of it. Other than the fact that they were both certified mental patients, she had nothing in common with Belinda, and if they ever got out of this place, she would cross the road to avoid her. Still, better to have her as a friend than an enemy. She patted Belinda's arm. "I'm glad too." Spotting Ed over by the chicken coop, basket in hand, collecting up the freshly laid eggs, she extricated herself from the other girl's grip.
"I'd like some time on my own now, if you don't mind." "But why? Best friends don't need time apart."
"Please, Belinda, I just need some time to think. I'll see you back on the ward." Without waiting for an answer, she left Belinda staring after her as she made her way over to the only true friend she had in Ambergate. "Morning, Ed." He pulled his head out of the hatching box, two warm brown eggs in one hand.
"Morning."
He held out his palm.
"Look at these two beauties."
He beamed as though he had laid them himself. Amy smiled. Only Ed could get excited about a couple of eggs.
"Wonderful, I'm sure. How are you?"
It wasn't a flippant question. Ed understood her. Although she had not felt able to tell him everything that had happened between herself and Dr. Lambourne, he knew enough to appreciate the pain she felt at the doctor's disappearance, and she found herself leaning on him more and more. In fact, without Ed, she would be unable to endure the agony.
"Oh, you know, still wondering why I'm here, abandoned by my own doctor, the one person who could have signed me out instead of just leaving me to rot." "You don't know that. He's only been gone a short while."
4 weeks and 2 days. He held out his arm.
"Come on."
She stepped forward and took hold of his hand. His face was tanned now, radiating a healthy glow, and she wondered how much longer he would be here. She pushed the thought from her mind.
"I'll just hand these eggs over to Dougie."
He jogged over to where the nurse was standing with a group of patients, trying to explain what he wanted each of them to do in the garden, and the difference between weeds and plants. Amy watched him go. He ran with confidence, his awkward gait a distant memory. She was pleased for him, of course. His road to recovery had been a long one, and his determination to get better had been well rewarded. But the idea of him leaving Ambergate was just too horrific for her to contemplate. It was another hot day. They had been spoiled in recent weeks with scorching temperatures, the only downside being that the nurses were more irritable than usual.
"Let's sit down here."
Ed gestured to a patch of grass in front of the old cricket pavilion, and they settled themselves down under the cloudless sky. He lay back and interlaced his fingers behind his head.
"Makes you forget where you are when you just stare up at that."
She lay down next to him, but propped herself up on one elbow so she could study his face. His eyes were closed, his features relaxed, and his dimples barely visible. She fumbled around in the grass and plucked a buttercup, holding it underneath his chin. He flapped his arms and sat up.
"Oh, there was something on me."
She laughed.
"It was me, you daft apor." She held up the buttercup. I was just seeing if you liked butter.
Oh, right.
He tilted his chin upwards.
And do I?
She squinted at the golden glow on his skin. Yes, you do, she declared. He picked at the daisies around them, making a halo out of the flowers and placing it on top of Amy's head.
Beautiful,
he whispered. He leaned forward and lightly kissed her cheek. She instinctively raised her hand and held it against her skin, where she could still feel the moistness from his lips. He appeared flustered.
I'm sorry, I don't know what came over me.
Don't be sorry, she said gently. I'm not. Chapter 34. She'd been sent to the stores to pick up a bundle of clothes for a new patient. The implementation of the unlocked door policy meant that the staff could now get the patients to do the menial tasks they thought were beneath them. Amy didn't mind, though. Any escape from the ward for a while came as a welcome relief. She walked along the endless corridor, trailing her hand along the shiny brown tiles and relishing the time to herself. Another month had slipped by, and there had still been no word from Dr. Lamborn. When she thought about the way he had used her and then discarded her as though she was yesterday's newspaper, she fizzed with a rage she found difficult to control. In her calmer, more rational moments, though, she knew he had not abandoned her. There had to be a logical explanation. He was, after all, a caring man. She knew this only too well, so it made sense that attending to a family emergency might take some time. She tucked the clothes bundle under her arm and decided to take a more circuitous route back to the ward, enjoying the solitude of the long, echoing corridors with only the sound of her own footsteps for company. She quickened her pace as she scurried past the dreaded locked wards. Some lunatics in here would never be trusted with the open door policy. She wasn't sure if it was a conscious decision, but after a while she found herself nearing Dr. Lamborn's office, and her heart quickened as she saw that the door bearing his name plaque was slightly ajar. She stood outside, hardly daring to draw breath as she listened intently to the movements inside. She heard a desk drawer open and close again, and then the sound of another drawer opening as though someone was searching for something. She put the bundle down on the floor, ran her hands through her hair, and pinched her cheeks to coax a little colour into them. Then she tapped on the door.
Come in.
She hesitated. He sounded older and weary, as though those two words had taken a monumental effort to utter. She entered the room and saw that he had his back to her as he wrestled with the sash window. The heat was oppressive and the atmosphere in the office was stuffy and stale, suffused with a smell of mothballs and beeswax. She longed for him to turn round, cross the room and take her in his arms. She didn't care that he'd been away for so long. He was back now, and that was all that mattered. He continued to struggle with the window, sighing irritably as it refused to yield.
I've missed you, she ventured.
He stopped bashing at the window and turned round. She gazed at him, her mouth open, ready to ask if he'd missed her too, but the question stuck in her throat, and she could only manage an unintelligible croak.
I beg your pardon,
he said.
Where's Dr. Lamborn?
May I ask who wants to know?
His tone was polite enough, but his features were hard and not at all welcoming. He was much older than Dr. Lamborn, the flash of grey at his temples and his liver-spotted hands evidence of his advancing years.
I'm a patient of his...
Were.
I'm sorry?
You were a patient of his. Dr. Lamborn has left Ambergate to take up a position elsewhere, and I will be replacing him. I'm sure you've been added to my list, so I will make my formal introduction to you when I conduct my ward rounds, but in the meantime, I have rather a lot to do, so if you'll excuse me.
A rushing noise filled her ears, as though her head was underwater.
Not coming back? But I need to see him!
The doctor smiled then, deep crow's feet wrinkling the skin around his eyes.
I'm Dr. Harrison, and I can assure you that I'm just as qualified as Dr. Lamborn to look after you.
He spoke slowly, enunciating his words as though he were talking to a deaf imbecile.
Now then, dear, can you run along back to where you came from, hmm? There's a good girl.
He steered her in the direction of the door, and she walked out in a trance. She wandered aimlessly through the maze of corridors, bouncing off the walls and stumbling blindly through doors. Salty tears stung her eyes, and she fought back the sobs that threatened to overcome her. Arriving at the end of the corridor in a part of the hospital she had never even seen before, she barged through the door and out into the sunshine. It was only then that she let go a piercing scream that seemed to come from the bowels of the earth. She didn't see the two male nurses who had come up beside her, but before she had a chance to protest, they had each taken an arm and frog-marched her without ceremony back to the ward. Sister Atkins threw her arms up in exasperation at the sight of Amy and her puffy-eyed, tear-stained face.
"Where the hell have you been?"
She turned to the two male nurses.
"I'll take it from here."
Amy stared at the floor, not bothering to reply. Sister Atkins grabbed the top of her hair, forcing her to look up.
"I asked you a question."
"I went to get a new clothes bundle like you asked me to."
"And where is it?"
Sister's face was only inches from hers as she tightened her grip. Amy looked around, half expecting the bundle to materialise out of thin air.
"I must have dropped it."
"You must have dropped it?" repeated Sister Atkins. "What kind of an idiot are you? Can't you carry out a simple errand without messing things up?"
Amy didn't know if she was supposed to answer or not. Sister delved into her pocket with her free hand, then held her palm open. Amy stared at the pile of white pills.
"Care to venture a guess as to where I found this little lot?"
She bent her head, but Sister pulled her upright again, her grip so tight Amy was afraid she would pull off a chunk of her scalp. She remained silent. Whatever she said wouldn't be right. Mercifully, Sister let go of her hair and shoved her hard in the chest instead.
"Get back in there. I'll deal with you later."
Amy collapsed onto her bed, rubbing at her sore head. Belinda was beside her in a minute.
"They found your pills under the mattress."
"So I gather."
"You need to take your pills to get better,"
Belinda urged. Amy regarded the girl with undisguised pity. "How long have you been here, Belinda?"
"Dunno. About 7 years, I think."
"And you've always taken your tablets?"
Belinda nodded eagerly.
"I have."
"And have they made you better?" Belinda thought for a moment.
"Yeah, of course."
"Then why are you still here?" Belinda shrugged.
"Well, I..."
"I'll tell you why. You haven't been cured because there was nothing really wrong with you in the first place. The treatments you've had over the years, all the ECT, the insulin coma stuff, the never-ending cocktail of drugs were all about controlling you, not curing you. They've deadened your senses, Belinda, turned you into someone who can no longer think for herself. They've institutionalised you, and the worst thing of all is that you're bloody grateful to them." Belinda hung her head and picked at a loose thread on her dress.
"But if I did get out, where would I go?"
she whispered.
"This is my home."
Amy rested her head on Belinda's shoulder and picked up her hand.
"And therein lies the tragedy."
Chapter 35. Their shift patterns had not been compatible for several weeks, and as Ellen waited for Dougie in the snug of their local pub, she twisted her engagement ring round and round on her finger, admiring the gold band with its trio of tiny diamonds. She had no idea how he had afforded it, until she thought back on how many extra shifts he had volunteered to do, and how he had switched from pints to halves and visited the local bakery to buy up the stale loaves they would otherwise have chucked away. It was all part of his master plan to save money in order to cap off their whirlwind romance with a proposal of marriage. She stood up as she saw him approaching the table. He rushed forward and buried his face in her neck, kissing her behind the ear and making her giggle.
Stop it,
she laughed, pushing him away good-naturedly.
Everybody's looking.
I can't help it. I've missed you.
And I've missed you too.
She swept his hair from his forehead as he sat down.
You look so tired, Dougie. Are you sure you're not overdoing it?
Don't worry about me. I'm made of strong stuff. You need to be to work in that place.
He took a long gulp of his beer.
I got some good news today, though. That lad I've been helping. You know, the one who was knocked off his bike.
Yes, I know the one. What about him?
He's going home next week. How about that?
Ellen hesitated.
Well, that is good news, I suppose. For him, at least.
What do you mean?
Oh, nothing. It's just I've got a patient who's really going to miss him, that's all.
You mean Amy?
Yes, that's the one. They've grown quite fond of each other.
Ellen shrugged.
Still, people move on, don't they? They're not prisoners.
She thought about Pearl and Queenie and poor old Gertie, who had been incarcerated for years.
At least that's what they'd have us believe.
The late afternoon sky had darkened ominously so that it felt more like evening, and although the rain was welcome after the heat of the last few weeks, the lightning that split the sky over the main building made her quicken her pace. By the time she reached the cricket pavilion, her hair hung in wet tendrils round her face, and her thin dress clung to her shivering body. Ed was waiting for her on the veranda. He held out his hand and helped her up the wooden steps.
"Look at you,"
he exclaimed.
"Here."
He wrestled himself out of his misshapen jacket and draped it around her shoulders. Amy smiled. Dr. Lamborn had done the very same thing only a couple of months ago. Had it really been that long already? She wondered how it was possible for time to fly by so quickly when she was so miserable.
"Come and sit down,"
invited Ed, still holding onto her hand. He didn't let go even when they were seated side by side on the wooden bench, instead loosely holding it in his lap.
"How are you getting on with your new doctor?"
She gave a snort.
"Oh, he's nothing like Dr. Lamborn. You know the sort? Talks a lot, says nothing. He doesn't care. He treats me the same as he treats all the others, just writing out prescriptions for the pills that keep us all stupefied and compliant."
She looked down at their entwined hands.
"I was really getting somewhere with Dr. Lamborn. I was honest about my feelings. It was like popping a cork on a champagne bottle. Everything came rushing out and it was helping me."
She saw her own despair reflected in Ed's eyes and shook her head.
"But you can't put the cork back in the bottle, can you?"
Ed looked pained, a deep frown creasing his forehead.
"But Dr. Lamborn must have left some notes detailing your progress. Surely they can't keep you here without good reason."
Amy gazed off towards the main building. The place was full of people who'd been detained without good reason.
"Oh, they can, Ed. They can."
He fell silent and stroked the back of her hand as he watched a line of men from the chronic ward shuffle along the edge of the field in their identical, ill-fitting suits, heads bowed and shoulders hunched. He knew that a couple of them had been here since the turn of the century.
"What are you thinking about, Ed?"
He turned to her and stared into her face, holding her gaze as he spoke.
"I'm leaving next week, Amy. I'm being discharged."
His words hung in the air, words that should have been a joy to hear. Ed deserved to go home. She doubted he should have ever been here in the first place.
"Well, that's wonderful news."
She forced a note of happiness into her voice.
"I'm so pleased for you. I really am. Of course, I'll miss you, but you come with me."
He cut her off, his voice full of conviction and a pleading look in his eyes.
"Come with you?"
She laughed momentarily, but then stopped as she saw he was deadly serious.
"But how? Where would I go?" "To my home. There's only Mother and me. We've got plenty of room till you find your feet."
She glanced around the grounds.
I don't know. How would I get out?
Ed scoffed.
It's not that difficult to get out.
It's the staying out that's more of a problem. As long as you're certified, the hospital has full authority over you. I've no doubt there would be a full-scale effort to bring you back. The police could get involved, possibly the local papers too.
Well, there you are then. What's the point? It would be hopeless. More hopeless than living out the rest of your life here.
She thought about the countless men and women housed behind the locked doors who were now so disturbed and dangerous they would never see the outside world again. No doubt they had been as sane as she was when they were admitted a lifetime ago. It was a grim reality that didn't bear thinking about. Then another thought occurred to her. Maybe she would be able to track down Dr. Lamborn if she escaped. They would be able to start afresh. She would no longer be his patient, and they would be free to be together at last. She turned to Ed, a small smile on her lips. He was waiting for her answer. She raised a quizzical eyebrow.
Do you have a plan?
He winked and squeezed her hand.
Happen I do.
Chapter 36. Her face flushed and her arms heavy. Amy smoothed out the starched sheet,